The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Explicit content may be heard throughout this podcast. Listening discretion is advised.
Would you dare?
What is up, Paraebs? You're listening to Exploring the Paranormal Perspective with Shauna, and I thank you so much for listening in and tuning in tonight. Tonight, I have an awesome, awesome geek search for you. It's going to be haunted forests. If you have any questions for guests or you have any ideas for geek searches or true crime, please feel free to hit me up over at Exploring the Paranormal Perspective on Facebook or Shaw Wooten, Shaw.Wooten, SHA.WOOTEN. And now, time for the show. Wednesday, March 16th, and tonight I bring you a geek search. It's been a while since I've done a geek search, so sit back, relax, grab you a brewski or a drink of your choice, and enjoy. Tonight, I give you haunted forests. Now, we're all pretty amazed sometimes at what people and myths and legends have stated was haunted, such as dolls, houses, I mean, even an old wooden step that someone had could be haunted and could be brought into your home, and need I say more? But do you ever think that the land itself is haunted? I mean, I know a lot of people back in the day were talking about Indian burial grounds and where the Indian reservations used to be, and that they say don't step or tread on those lands. What about forests? Do you think that forests could be haunted? Or not even really haunted. Maybe more along the lines of eerie. Or, I don't know, it gives you a good feeling of peace. Sometimes a lot of people that I know that are pagans and other ritualistic type people, they do love to go into nature and enjoy the peace there. I know some that take off their shoes and just soak up the soil and anything that Mother Nature has to give them, which is pretty cool. But tonight we're going to talk about some very mysterious forests and some of the myths and legends behind them. Starting off with number 5, we have the Bokani Forest. Now, keep in mind, I'm Southern, so some of these things I may not pronounce perfectly, but I'm gonna try. Bokani Forest. Now, we all know there are myths and legends all around, everywhere, and in my beliefs, just my beliefs only, I believe that urban legends, myths, all the ghost stories you hear of today, they all come from somewhere. Somebody said something back in the day, whether it was for shits and giggles or it really happened. Somebody started it, and over time, it either got misconstrued or misunderstood, or something wrong was said. Maybe it's something totally different. Maybe somebody said, I went to go milk a cow and I got milk on me, and it ended up being somebody murdered this cow and the owner couldn't get the milk, and now there's a ghost lady that's walking the path. You know, a lot of things like that can happen, but the story started somewhere. Now, Pocono Forest is an old, ancient holy site. Anyone can take a walk along the path to just enjoy the way it makes you feel. One of the reasons that people believe this place is so mystic and so holy is because of the stones that are in the area. The stones kind of form groups, piles, sometimes walls, that are called the Pocono Stone Agglomerates. Now, when you walk the path, you'll see the stones. And each one has been carefully cleaned. And some of them have even been given names. Now, there's different paths. There's the health path, there's the path of seasons, and then there's the zodiac circle. And on these paths, you can either take them by yourself, or you can have a group with you. And there's also a place to camp. There's educational tours, meals cooked on bonfires. I mean, it seems like it's a pretty awesome place. Now, the Pocono Forest is located in Latvia, Riga, and no one has any explanation of how the rocks got there, why they're in their groups or on a wall or anything that's been made. But a lot of people have speculations that maybe somebody brought them there, maybe to build a house or a mighty castle for a king or queen. But there's no records of anything being brought into the area. Now, others could be like, this goes into the word of mouth thing, going from cow to whatever. But, I mean, this could have been just a farmer clearing out rocks out of his field and piled them up in a pile, and they've just been there forever. But at the same time, how they get so deep into the forest. How long have these rocks been around like this? Now, there's been some people that actually put some energy and stuff into the stones. And a lot of pagans in the area believe that it's an old pagan sanctuary. Now, just keep in mind, guys, I've done some research, but I'm not an expert on this forest. I do know that, according to research, there are psychics that go there, there are channelers that go there, there are visitors of all kinds of worship, all different kinds of religions, all different kinds of, you know, thoughts and beliefs. But a lot of people that go there say that the stones give them energy. They can feel the kinetic power. Some people even bring offerings. But a lot of other people consider this place to be haunted. Or even maybe a veil that has been told that maybe somebody may die soon or a visitor may perish. There are stories which talk about deaths within the forest. And they say never take a stone home. Never take it from the forest. It's kind of like paranormal investigators, and they say when they go to a location, do not bring anything home. That includes physical objects. These stones lay in piles. And not just one pile, but random piles all across the forest. They're shaped kind of weird and unnatural. Some may say it's due to the mystic energy that's there. Some others aren't really sure why they're shaped the way they are. But aside from pagans and psychics, you're going to get the thrill seekers, the paranormal investigators, the ghost hunters, those that want to come and try to see what's causing the haunts of this forest. A lot of people aren't getting like really bad vibes from the forest. They mostly get just like really positive mystic energy, healing energy, if you will. Now, there was one man that started talking to reporters about the strange weather anomalies that happened in the forest. And the mysterious properties of the stones. Ivar Wicks had told reporters of this phenomenon. So scientists, of course, do what scientists do, and they go and study it. One of the scientists that studied it is Russian physicist Evgeny Sidorov. There's foliage of oaks that grow on one side, and there's hills all around. The rocks, the stones, though, are what most of the people say are the most important thing about this forest. Now, legend has it that way back in the day of pilgrims, those that came from Europe brought them and left them as a symbol of liberation from sin. Like, here's stone, have me a sin, I'm gonna leave you right here now. Bye-bye. Do not follow me. Do not come home. I don't know, but like I said, a story, my belief is that a story starts, and it could be just as simple as them bringing the stones to build a home, but turning hundreds of years later into, oh, they brought them to push their sins into the stones, and that is why the stones are here. So there's about 30 of these hills, and back then it was told that there were 30 priests, druids, that controlled the weather. But yet the weather in Pocani Forest is good. Even when all around it is bad. Now, for the haunted aspect of this forest, there are reports that people suffered in these woods. Even dying shortly after leaving the woods. And a lot of locals state, do not steal a stone, or you'll have a bad stint of luck. What do you think? Would you take a stone?
We'll be right back.
Millions of people are affected by the Para-X bug.
I realize that it is something that will stay with me for the rest of my life and long into the afterlife as well.
If you have the Para-X bug, there is hope.
With a nightly visit to the Para-X website and intensive past life regression therapy, I can control it.
Even with the Para-X bug, I can still lead an active life of radio show hosting, paranormal investigating, evidence checking, attending conferences, book writing, keeping up with the latest technology, and still keep my 40-hour-a-week day job.
If you think that you have the Para-X bug or know someone who might, visit para-x.com. And remember, you are not alone.
I am not alone.
I
am not alone.
The Para-X bug may cause the urge to chase shadow people, visit exotic haunted locations, adopt a pugwudgie, or spend all of your time trying to figure out the laws and principles of paranormal investigation. Listening to Para-X may increase these effects.
Sudden visions of full-body apparitions or feeling the covers being pulled off you in the middle of the night by unseen hands may also be signs of exposure to the Para-X bug.
The use of Para-X may be habit-forming, and an overwhelming desire to provoke spirits may be a serious side effect. If these symptoms last more than 4 hours, you should quickly consult a trusted witch and have her cast a "What the hell are you thinking?" spell on you. If symptoms persist, please contact the Para-X Radio Network Homeland Security Team for further instructions.
The Para-X bug may cause urges for late-night speaking with spirits and ghosts. Listening to Para-X may increase these effects. Overwhelming desire to try provoking a spirit may be a serious side effect. Those with Para-X bug effects lasting more than 4 hours should consult Para-X or see a professional. Sudden outbursts at the mention of orbs may be a sign of exposure to the Para-X bug. Use of Para-X may be habit-forming. Use caution when engaging in Para-X chat.
Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And now back to the show.
Number 4. Yosemite National Park, California. Now, this is kind of a lot of urban legends. There's a lot of different things that go on in Yosemite that's creepy and make it considered haunted. Now, I'm going to give you a couple of their urban legends that they have. And you're more than welcome to tell me what you think. One of the urban legends is that there's this kind of interdimensional or paranormal danger that is around the waterfalls in Yosemite. And an ancient legend states, and this is from the Awani tribe, that two women that were picking berries at the top of the falls had a mist come in and swirl up. And when one of the women moved close to this mist, it had a burst of wind that shrieked out and threw her down the waterfall. The chief had actually said that there was an evil spirit in the mist, known as Bohono. And actually told people, you know, do not go up there. Do not go near that, his home. We all know rivers, oceans, waterfalls, they all claim lives. But to hear something as old as this happening, and for an Indian chief to name it, I'd actually heard a little bit from other paranormal shows here on Parax Radio about some shamans and some chiefs and speak about the elders in Indian tribes and about Bigfoot and how the elders know there's a Bigfoot. So it's very interesting. It makes you really want to research and look back at all the stuff that was going on and what the elders of the tribes and what the tribes actually believed in and talked about back in those days. Makes it very interesting to talk to others about Pukwudgies and Bigfoot and anything in cryptozoology. Now, one of the legends that I read about that really caught my eye was Grouse Lake of Galen Clark. Now, Galen Clark was Grouse Lake's park first ranger. But a lot of people think that this goes way further than that. But there are accounts that state that he was there in 1857. What the documentation states is that he kept hearing cries, and it made him wonder if there was a dog that was hurt somewhere. He even questioned the local tribe, the local native tribe, and that tribe told him that he needed to stay away, do not go anywhere near it. They told him that it wasn't a dog and that he shouldn't even look for what it is. And actually explained to him that it was a spirit of a boy that had drowned, who had drowned in the lake a while ago. The boy calls out to anyone nearby, trying to lure them into the lake, and then dragging them under to their death. Dude, you wouldn't have to tell me twice. Now, it would reach this mama's heart that it was a boy, but oh my God. There's a book that was written about, well, not just this, but it has tales of hikes and national parks that was written by Andrea Langford. Now, keep in mind that this is documented by Galen Clark. And now, he was the ranger for about 20 years. And it was bounced back and forth between federal and state. And who was going to own it? Kind of like mom and dad. And who's going to have the kids? However, he lived a long life up until 1910. To which he was 96 years old. Now, there's a cemetery there that has around 45 graves, but only one big headstone whose people think may be Galen Clark. In 1857, somewhere around September, Galen went on a hike to Grouse Lake. This lake is not too far from Wawana, and he took a break by the shore. It was then he heard the wailing cry, kind of like a puppy. So he assumed a dog was left behind by one of the Indians. He joined the band of Indians at their hunting camp and then started speaking about what he had heard. Now, in his own words, I'm going to repeat maybe not word for word, but these are Galen Clark's words from Andrea Langford's book. They replied that it was not a dog, that a long time ago an Indian boy had been drowned in the lake, and that every time anyone passed there, he always cried after them. But no one dared go into the lake. Or if they did, the boy would catch them and pull them down, and they would be drowned. He goes on to talk about what he considered was going on from the stories they were telling him, and thought that maybe it was some kind of bird that was making the cry, and that the Indians were trying to see if he was stupid or not. But I think he started to believe that they really believed it and that it was true. It's interesting. I don't know if I would want to go to Grouse Lake to find out. But if you've been to Grouse Lake, let me know. And now we come to Bigfoot. Bigfoot at Yosemite. Jane Goodall, who is an anthropologist, has said that she believes in Bigfoot, or that a Yeti is named Bigfoot. There's been a lot of sightings of Bigfoot in a lot of different places, Yosemite being one of the main places, but there's also been sightings close to the Canadian border, in Michigan, and I even think there was one that was in Indiana not too long ago, either Indiana or New York. A lot of sightings of Bigfoot have been pretty much all over the United States. I know here recently, Oklahoma has been a big sighting for Bigfoot. Other places include Georgia, West Virginia, Wisconsin, North Dakota. I mean, there are so many different places that I've stated that they've seen Bigfoot, and there's actual footage that somebody has gotten that's news has covered it. People are starting to set up trail cameras to catch stuff at night. Now, a lot of people think, or a lot of people say, that these the footages from the trail cameras are edited and graphics are put in place and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it very well could be. A lot of people want to fake shit anymore just to try to become famous. And it really hurts those of us that go out there and try to get actual evidence to prove that, hey, this is something that does exist. Whether you believe it or not, it is out there and it does happen. Bigfoot is out there. He does exist. Now, have I ever seen Bigfoot? No. Am I a little skeptic? Yes, but I'm a little skeptic about everything, including spirits and paranormal. And I think everybody should be a little bit skeptic when it comes to that. But if proof is there and people see it and you look at it and it's been analyzed and they say, I have no idea what this is, this very well could be, then very well could be. A lot of people believe in their own religions, and a lot of people don't have any proof to back their religions up, but what they feel and what they have. My belief in God, I believe in Him because I should not be here today. After all the stuff that's happened to me in my past, there is a higher being looking out for me. And I believe in God. But that's just me. That's my religion. A lot of other people talk about it being the elements and the spirits that are out there actually helping people. You know, and that very well could be. My papa could have been the one that was there helping me when I got in my wreck at 16. But, you know, like I said, you can't see air unless you freeze it. So there's got to be some way or something that people have caught and found that is actual proof. But I digress. What do you guys think? That was just some of the 8 urban legends that are going on in Yosemite National Park. I think I might do a whole series on this at a later time. Stay tuned and we'll see, because the others are just as interesting as the ones that I spoke of. The one that I do want to talk about is the creepy ghost that they say is there. And like the suicide forest, or this is a suicide. Now, a lot of campers state that they go there and they stay in number 6 at the campsite. When they look out of their tent at the hours of, between the hours of 11 p.m. and 3 a.m., they say you might see the ghost of a camper who took his own life. There wasn't a note. This person who committed suicide didn't leave a note. Nobody knows what or why he committed suicide. Now, the tents out there, if you look at them at camp number 6, they're like framed. They're wooden framed in the tents, canopy over them. And it's like there's a door and there's stairs. And it was claimed that he hung himself from one of the wooden frames of the tent, and that you could see him swinging from the tent frame. No one knows really how credible the story is. I have not done a lot of research on it because I wanted to get as much of just the stories and the urban legends out there to you guys that I could. But like I said, this has been intriguing to me, and I think I'm going to do a whole show on Yosemite National Park soon, because the suicide guy wasn't the only one that they talk about. So we have the spirit of the boy in Grouse Lake. Then we have the suicide spirit. And there's a few other spirits there that people have talked about. And because I have other forests I want to talk about, we will come back to this one at a later time and speak about all the urban legends of Yosemite National Park.
Be right back after this commercial break.
This is Aaron Gillow from Ghost Adventures, and you're listening to Para-X Radio.
There's a darkness in the hallway. Voices that seem to come from nowhere. Alone at night, there is a feeling that something or someone is near. Where can you go? Who can you turn to? Para-X Radio and the all-new Para-X Vision can help. Our knowledgeable host and expert guest can help you find some answers and take a glimpse into the unknown. Para-X Radio and Para-X Vision, programming for the open mind.
Sourire.
Et la bombe.
That's from the world.
Dead Zone WDZRDB.
Where metal and the paranormal collide.
Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
You've no doubt heard of Tango and Cash, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, perhaps It Takes Two to Tango. Well now, on the first and third Thursdays of each month, there's a show called Tango and Friends at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network with your host, Bruce Tango. And yes, there will be at least two to tango on each episode, sometimes even more. There's going to be lots of topics and lots of guests you'll all know and lots of surprises. Tango and Friends, every first and third Thursday of the month at 8 p.m. right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hi, this is Marla Brooks from Stirring the Cauldron. Thursdays are a great night on the Para-X Radio Network. We start off the evening with Journey into the Light, Chapter 3, with your hosts, Psychic Little T and Tabby Cat Gash at 7 p.m. Eastern. Then, on the first and third Thursdays of the month at 8 p.m., it's Tango and Friends, hosted by Bruce Tango. And on the alternate Thursdays at 8 p.m., tune in to Stirring the Cauldron, the archive podcast. Every week at 9 p.m. Eastern, join me on Stirring the Cauldron Live. And then at 10 p.m., stick around for New Aeon Now with Lily Alley, Davron Michaels, and Christine Matza. Finally, to round out the night, join Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz on the Paranormal Encounters podcast. All this, every Thursday, right here on Para-X.
Welcome back. Number 3. Highgate Cemetery, London, UK. A lot of you that are interested in paranormal are going to know about the cemetery. Those of you that don't, there's approximately 170,000 people buried around and in 53,000 graves. How crazy is that? This one might be one I go into and do one on it as well. Yes, I had said that I was doing for us, and the reason I chose Highgate Cemetery is because it is surrounded by forests. It's surrounded by woods. You look at the pictures and you see nature overtaking some of the headstones. You see vines wrapping around them. It's eerily beautiful. Of course, there are opening times to get in there. It's open between 10 and 5 p.m. So please do not break into the cemetery. Make sure if you're going to investigate, get permission. Now, the oldest part of the cemetery is going to be on the west side, the western side. And that was consecrated. For those of you that don't know what consecrated is, it was made sacred by the Bishop of London on the 20th of May in 1839. And it was meant to provide more cemeteries, large cemeteries, to the ring of the city of London. A lot of the cemeteries that were in the center, they were part of individual churches. They'd also been unable to cope with the number of burials they were having, and it was deemed a health hazard. Highgate has been admired and visited for several years. The tombs, the headstones, everything that you think on Halloween, that's this cemetery. You have Egyptian models, you have Gothic, you have, I mean, it's just a beautiful maze of gorgeous marble awesomeness. So, back in 1854, the eastern part was opened. There's a lot of people that are buried here. And to keep the section short, because I'm only on number 3, I'm not going to go over all the royal... I'm not going to mention all the people that were buried there. they have a they have a few that I will say, because of them being so high, highly known. One being Henry Moore, the painter. Those who are indulgent art will know who Henry Moore is. Karl Marx. he's there. John Singleton Copley, who was an artist, and Edward Hodges Bailey, who was a sculptor. Those are just some of the highly known people that are there. Trees are all over the place. You got vines, flowers. There are paths all along the area that you can walk to see all the different graves. But unfortunately, the cemetery only lets you go into the oldest part of the cemetery with tours that are chaperoned. Now, the reason I chose this place is because of my fascination with ghosts and vampires. There is a vampire legend. In the 60s, the cemetery started needing a lot of repairs. It was really getting overgrown, and wasn't the caretaker, if it even had a caretaker then, wasn't doing his job. But in the 60s, that's around the time that the notorious Highgate Vampire came into play. And of course, it being haunted. A lot of people think cemeteries are haunted. The vampire and ghoul sightings were in between the east and west side of the cemetery. There's a little lane that goes through, and it's called Swain's Lane. A couple of girls that went out, and they seen the dead rising from their graves as they were walking down Swain's Lane. Now, they reported this incident, and after they reported it, somebody else reported a hooded black figure lurking in the graveyard. And after that report, another report came in, and another report came in, and another report came in, talking about the same shadowy figure. And after that, cops started getting calls about animal carcasses being found in the cemetery, outside the cemetery, all around the cemetery, and each one was drained of their blood. And hence, the Highgate Vampire was born. Then, of course, you know, the media's got to come into play. When the media comes into play, everything goes all crazy willy-nilly. When you, especially when you get people that want to become famous, go head-to-head against each other and want to be the most popular out there in the world. And then the once awesome story of the Highgate Vampire just loses control. And these magicians want to hunt down this vampire. So way back on 1973, on April 13th, oh yay, Friday the 13th, a vampire hunt was organized. Yep. And the cemetery went to shit. They could care less about what anything looked like when they trampled all through that cemetery. They vandalized graves. They disturbed some graves. They even took out some corpses and staked them and beheaded them. Oh my God. So after that was all said and done, a lot of people think that there was a dark cult that was also there. Rituals had occurred, and of course more corpses were disturbed, and there was one corpse that actually ended up in a man's locked car. How the hell did a corpse get inside a man's locked car? So either it's a made-up story, or it's a really fucked-up story. But to this day, people still report sightings of vampires. I mean, what do you think? There has been told of vampires gathering in different cities worldwide to talk about their lives and what they should do in the modern world. Oh, there has. And that will be a story I will be doing as well. So tell me, do you believe zombies came from the graves? Or that there was a vampire that was sucking the blood out of animals? Who knows?
Well, that's it for part one of Haunted Forest. Stay tuned next week for part two. You don't want to miss the second and the first, the two and the one. Come on now. Thank you guys for listening. You have yourself a wonderful rest of the week. And don't drink too much tomorrow for St. Patty's Day. Bye.